Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, follow me on Twitter at Brian Lehrer. Like me on Facebook, Brian Lehrer, WNYC. We just got our 10,000th Facebook fan last week, so join us on social media. Our next guest has quite the resume, still expanding. Acclaimed musician, professor at the European Graduate School in Switzerland, and editor and author of the book Sound Unbound, Sampling Digital Music and Culture. This week he adds to that resume by becoming the Metropolitan Museum of Art's first ever artist in residence as part of the museum's new series, The Met Reframed. He is DJ Spooky, a.k.a. Paul D. Miller. DJ Spooky, Paul, welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. How you doing? I wanted to show you a fun photo. I was just in Beijing and checking out a really interesting artist, Ai Weiwei.
You hung out in China with the dissident Ai Weiwei, who's under house arrest?
Yeah, it's interesting because the idea for me is art is always about communication across cultures. And when I was in Beijing, I've usually checked him out. The problem, of course, is, well, the communist government is him under, like, total, like,
lockdown.
Yeah. And so, but he's a really good-hearted guy, and he has an opening here at Mary Boone Gallery that I highly recommend if you haven't checked it out.
It looks like he's holding a copy of your magazine,
yeah.
Origin.
Yeah.
So this is a publicity shot?
No, we were just messing around. But I'll show you a more amusing image just as, but it's the fun part about, hang out with other artists is there's a sense of humor. He's always he's very good-hearted, good-spirited guy.
That's not his finger, let's say, in the air, though. That's yours.
But he has a very funny film called Ai Weiwei Never Sorry that just came out, and the promo shots are always his. He's doing this kind of
his middle finger.
Yeah, like at the Imperial Palace or something.
It's so, a sense of humor. What's the level of his freedom of speech? I mean, he's under house arrest on the one hand, but he's hanging with you on the other hand and taking pictures.
Well, yeah, God knows. I mean, at the moment, art is. I think if you look at Tsai Guaching, who is a Chinese dissident who they let out. Who fled to the U.S. Embassy and all this stuff. China, I mean, this is probably way off topic compared to the Met. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll get there. This is fascinating. So you wrote it up.
Well, I'm very intrigued with the role that China has in the global market right now, because everything we're probably wearing and using is probably manufactured there. And the way that one looks at economics and culture and production and all these things, that's the world's factory. So Foxconn, where your iPad and your phones and everything, that's, you know, so as an artist, that kind of production is really massive. I mean, you just see the scale. Americans don't realize how big China is. I mean, just they'll build new cities every couple, you know, right now. It's just churning. So I go there every couple months to just check it out. And I was doing a project with the Beijing Central Conservatory, which is their top sort of classical music school. I was there for a couple days, week, and just was hanging out and checking out a lot of different people. And I'm very respectful of it's a different situation, and you really have to be cautious about going around lecturing people, which Americans love to do. Yeah. And so I was just listening, hearing, you know.
So let's bring it home. This week kicks off your tenure as the Met's first ever artist in residency. What does that mean exactly?
Well, the Met is like a huge record collection, and it's like I feel like a kid in the candy store because it's such an incredible, diverse and highly selective curatorial initiative. I mean, they have stuff from like Thomas Edison's early phonographs, daguerreotypes from the Civil War, early, you know, fashion design from Prada, you know, you name it, like radically unexpected and different kind of stuff. And I've been collecting records since I was a kid. So to me, looking at the Met is just this huge idea. And we're going to be doing this idea of exploring the archive through sampling.
Can you give us a preview of how some of that might work?
Sure. Tomorrow night, I'm doing the first happening. We're doing a series of happenings at the museum. I'm really interested in Asian cinema. And so there's a gentleman named Han Hae-mo. I'm never sure if I'm pronouncing these names correctly, so please excuse my Korean pronunciation. But there's a film called Jaeyeon Bui, which is the first film made after the Korean Civil War. And it's set in the club scene in Seoul in the 1950s. So they're listening to jazz, and it's Korean jazz ensembles. And it's set in this kind of underground scene. So I'm presenting that film and rescoring it live with a Korean string ensemble that I'm going to be sampling live through my iPad software that I developed.
Wow. Translation of that movie title, I think, is Madam Freedom.
Yeah,
is it that film?
Mm-hmm.
So you were commissioned to rescore it several years ago, as you said. And so when you say live sampling, is there going to – I think of sampling as using recorded bits of music. Is there going to be a live string ensemble?
Yeah, there will be an ensemble on half the stage, and their feed is going to be going over to me, and I'll be sampling it through the software I developed. So I'm really interested in the way software is changing what it means to do art, because everything from Photoshop, Adobe Premiere, probably even the way you edit this. So this is the DJ Spooky iPad app. So it's like turntables, and it can also mix video and stuff like that. So I'll be controlling the images and everything through the software. And I'm really interested in the way the 21st century has allowed a kind of very democratic approach to culture right now, because usually we've had a top-down system for many years. So the 20th century, even the development of an album, what you meant to get a piece of vinyl. So somebody had to manufacture that. So, again, it's just kind of really intriguing right now to do film, because I think that's where our culture – film and video games. Mm-hmm. It's a long story. Those are the two biggest phenomena right now.
Right. And I see that this event where people can actually use your app at the concert is labeled a participatory concert.
Yeah. And you got to remember, museums are kind of top down. Like it's a, if you go to a rich person's house, you see a Picasso painting. You know, it's meant to be an emblem of status and wealth and so on. But digital media, if everybody has a copy of something, the value, quote unquote, if you look at the economics, is always about this idea of free and open culture, because everyone's copying and trading files. So I love the idea of a paradox of how art is usually these objects of, you know, status and wealth, but digital is like just copies and stuff like that.
Do you ever have a concern in a participatory thing like this that the amateurs in the audience who are doing the best they can just don't have the artistic skill that professional performers or musicians or however you want to characterize artists can do, and so it brings down the level of the work?
That's a good – you know what? That's a great point. Democratization doesn't mean it's all going to be professional and glossy and slick. I mean, it means like if you look at the beat poets in the 1950s, what they were doing was really raw and really wild, and it was new. And I think the 21st century, our folk culture is now digital at this point. Everybody has to figure out a new kind of literacy, a new approach to thinking about what it means to make culture in a digital era. So you're right. I mean, some people – you know, not everybody knows how to code, and not everybody knows how to – put together files and stuff like that. But they more than likely know how to use a cell phone at this point, or more than likely know how to push a button on an elevator, which is...
At least that.
Yeah. So it's funny, this election right now, I was watching the debates with Weiwei in China, and we were talking. He was like, Obama's a nice guy, but you know, he has to push back. And we were really interested.
He wanted to see Obama pushing back more on Romney or on China?
On Romney, we were talking. We didn't even talk about China and Obama, but it was definitely more about, like, it was interesting watching it in China while the debates was just going on. I just got back a day ago, so.
Jet lag.
Non-existent. I'm in the 25th time zone at this point. But it was really intriguing because the Chinese were watching the debate. I was in a room full of Chinese watching a debate in America as a sort of traveler. And they were just like, Obama is smarter, more interesting, more dynamic, but this other guy keeps talking all these different things. Like, he's saying one thing, he's saying another thing. So it was really interesting to see their take. And just as a traveler, seeing how foreigners are looking at our election process right now, because who is Romney anyway? He's very postmodern, actually, one could say.
By picking a piece from here and a piece from there and putting together his modern self.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess that's one definition of the postmodern politician. By the way, anytime you want to come and bring Ai Weiwei with you in your next appearance, you're welcome to do that. But another event you'll be hosting at the Met will revolve around the museum's Oceanic Galleries. You operate an artist colony on the South Pacific island of Vanuatu I guess you do live in the 25th time zone and you probably never sleep. So tell us about your connection with Oceania.
Yeah, it's funny. I live a couple blocks from here in Tribeca. And the fun part about being in New York is we are an island. You know, people tend to forget that, Manhattan is an archipelago. So the pun here is like islands and networks. Vanuatu, there's this thing called the Happiness Index that a lot of economists are looking at. How do you rate the quality of living of a country once you move past measuring GDP? And GDP, for those out there who aren't into technical, means gross domestic production. So America churns out cars, stereos, and so on. So does China. But that doesn't mean that we are happy. So the happiness index is really intriguing to me because, again, production and manufacturing are all these ways of how we measure progress. So are people happy? Are people so? Long story short, Vanuatu keeps getting rated as the happiest place on earth. So I'd read about it. And so I was like,
I thought I always heard Bhutan.
Yeah. Well, they have a king telling you to be happy. That's a different. They have happiness committees. You have to actually prove how a project will generate more happiness.
Wow.
Seriously, I couldn't make this up. I wish I could. Very global quirkiness. But Vanuatu is rated as one of the happiest places on earth. Their art is really fascinating because it's based on carving, and they actually invented bungee jumping based on these huge structures that you climb up and jump off of. So I was reading about it, checked it out, flew out there, hung out there for several times and like 6 weeks at a time, and was visiting these different islands, just looking at different cultures. I was really interested as this kind of, again, the postmodern turn. I mean, I majored in philosophy. It's a long story.
Mm-hmm.
But the way globalization is working, like places like the Cayman Islands, Vanuatu, the Maldives, these are kind of like the canary in the coal mine, so to speak, of global culture, networks, finance, all these things, offshore banking. So islands are really interesting because they're like networks and hubs. Airports, you could say, are islands or... You know, everything's about connectivity, and that's what that project's going to be about.
I want to actually mention a thing you're going to be doing here at the Green Space at WNYC, part of our sister station WQXR's Beethoven Awareness Month, and you're going to be doing an event called Beethoven Remixed on November 8th. What are you going to do there?
I'm a huge fan of live sampling, and it's funny, like watching the debate. After the debate, immediately there were YouTube clips of remix clips of Romney and Obama kind of doing a mashup. A lot of people started posting remixes, and you know, so Beethoven is one of those guys. He got the idea of the riff. You know, if I went dun 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 dun, everybody knows that riff, right? So it's kind of one of those things. Like Warhol also got riffs. Like he would just take the same piece and copy it and make different versions. Beethoven, same. You know, so. There's a couple guys in the European classical tradition, Vivaldi, Mozart, Beethoven, and Bach. Those are the four, the riff guys. Like they just kind of, you can take them and mix them with beats, and it just works.
And everybody recognizes them.
So that's half the battle, is finding something recognizable. Beethoven really got it. You remember the disco hit Fifth of Beethoven?
Sure.
Yeah.
So there you go. DJ Spooky in the Green Space, part of WQXR's Beethoven Awareness Month, Beethoven Remixed on November 8th. And... he is the artist in residency, the first ever at the Met. Here's a quick question from a listener on our comments page who I guess doesn't have an iPhone. John Kay from New Jersey asks, hey, DJ Spooky, when will there be an Android app?
That's a great question. I'm in the middle of developing it. Android is very fragmented. In fact, Google, it's very interesting because they are a search engine company. But releasing Google Android, don't forget it, the iPad's only been out since 2010. It was a major game changer. And Google Android operating system's been out since 2008, but it's very fragmented. So there's now Google Jelly Bean. Before that, there was Google Ice Cream Sandwich, you know, 4.0, 4.1. It's a long story, but anybody into software, like there's now Windows 8. So half those things don't talk to the other devices anymore because it's like the software keeps changing. So I have to figure out a way to make an app that will work across all of the Google Android operate because there's cell phones, tablets, and each of them has different. But Apple, regretfully, on one hand, it's like one platform. So if you make an app, it works on the phone and the tablet. I'll leave it at that.
And we will leave it at that. Paul Miller, a.k.a. DJ Spooky, now the first ever artist in residency at the Metropolitan Museum. And we leave you with a taste of his score for the Korean film Madam Freedom, which you can catch at the Met tomorrow night at 7. Tickets still available. Thank you very much.
Good to see you, Ryan. Hey, so it's always a pleasure to catch up. Yeah.